Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly.
And I am your co-host, Austin.
And by now, you've surely heard so many documentaries and podcast episodes about how Scott Peterson is guilty. But I want to talk about the other side of the case, facts that you should probably consider, because if they are true, they would point to Scott's innocence. I think anytime you look into a case or you're a juror on a case, you should carefully weigh the evidence from both sides. But all you ever hear is that Scott is guilty and here's why. So when I did my deep dive on Casey Anthony, I went through the points that were made by the defense and argued each one of them with proven facts, because at the time she was coming out with this documentary declaring her innocence and people were actually believing her. And I just thought it was important to consider that the things that were not highly publicized, and those things coincidentally pointed to her guilt, despite her being acquitted. Now, in this case, we're sort of doing the opposite, because Scott was convicted of murder. And while you hear so much that points to his guilt, like he's a cheater, he's a liar, listen to the tapes, the things he told Amber, he's a sociopath. I get it. He is a terrible person. There's just no denying that. But there are some facts that make me question his guilt. And at the end of the episode, we're just going to have to weigh the things that are inculpatory and exculpatory and decide if he got a fair trial and a fair conviction.
Ooh, this is going to be good.
We have a lot to talk about. Buckle up. It's going to be a very long episode. So last week we left off with the search for Lacey, and this week's episode is going to go similarly to how last week's went, where it's a lot more conversational. I do have a lot written down that I want to touch on, but obviously I'm going to leave room for you to speak as well.
Because you know I got things to say.
You've got some opinions, and the people want to hear it.
Okay. To what the, give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want. Okay, so last week, like I said, we left off with the search for Lacey. Police arrived at the Peterson's house the same night she went missing. Her keys, wallet, and sunglasses were all found in her purse, which was left in her closet. So initially, it seemed as though Lacey went for a walk in the neighborhood and possibly disappeared during that walk. Lacey's family was very supportive of Scott, calling them this ideal couple, the couple that everyone wanted to be. And investigators brought Scott in almost immediately and questioned him just to get an idea of who and what they were working with. And this is very standard in any missing persons case. The husband is usually the first suspect. And he told them that he had been out fishing at the San Francisco Bay, and exactly where he was fishing, which we'll get into. But within 24 hours, it was actually less than 12 hours, the police announced that to the public. They put out a press release saying, we have this girl missing. Her husband, you know, came home from fishing at the bay and she wasn't home.
No way.
Yes.
Because that's where she ends up being found.
Exactly.
That is crazy.
Yes.
That kind of goes to back to whenever we have stories where it's like, why don't they say this? And you always remind me, hey, sometimes they don't reveal stuff in case things like this.
Yeah. And yeah, just to keep the integrity of the case, because it just leaves too much up for chance.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to, you know, we'll get into that. Obviously, I want to point out that everything Scott told investigators about the 24th, the day that she went missing, was proven to likely be true. So here are some examples. Scott said that as they were eating breakfast, Lacey had a piece of toast while Scott ate some cinnamon puffin cereal from Trader Joe's. A receipt was found that showed Lacey had purchased groceries, including that cereal, the day before at Trader Joe's. It's just a minute detail, but it's one of those details that, like, why would you lie about it? So if he's, you know, being honest and that detail turns out to be true, I just feel like it adds to credibility. Scott said that Lacey made mentions of what she was going to make for Christmas brunch the following day and that it needed to marinate over the overnight. He called it a few things because he didn't know what it actually was. He called it French toast, cordon bleu, some Grand Marnier bread. And so there were people who complained that that changed in his story, but a recipe was actually found, printed out, and on their kitchen counter for a creme brulee French toast that called for Grand Marnier, and the bread had to be marinated overnight. So that checked out.
So it all adds up.
Yes. There was also mention of Martha Stewart being on TV that morning making lemon meringue cookies or something of that nature. Detective Al Brocchini testified that that aired on the 23rd, not on the 24th, in an attempt to discredit Scott or make him look like he was making stuff up.
Enter TiVo.
Exactly. When he was confronted with footage of the episode that aired on the 24th, the Martha Stewart on the Today Show episode, she was making lemon meringue cookies. And when he was confronted with that footage, he was like, oh, well, I must have missed it. And this is just one of many F-ups that we're going to see from Detective Al Brocchini.
So was it actually on or was it like pre-recorded, like I said?
It was actually on. Al Brocchini was saying that it was aired on the 23rd in an attempt to make just Scott look like he, you know, was creating this false alibi.
Got it.
So Scott told Lacey's mom that on the morning of Christmas Eve, Lacey was in their bathroom curling her hair. The night before, when Scott got his hair cut by Lacey's sister Amy, Amy Rocha, Amy showed her how to curl her ends out. That was very trendy at the time. So that morning, she had set up the curling iron and a stool in front of the mirror. And Scott remembered telling her mom, Lacey's mom, that she looked so cute doing it. The curling iron and the stool were found in the bathroom. And the reason that this is important is because their housekeeper, Margarita Nava, testified that she had been at the house cleaning the day before and did not see the stool or curling iron in the bathroom. So this would again corroborate Scott's testimony that she was alive that morning before he left, because there's been discrepancies. Some people say that they believe she actually died the night before or somewhere through the night. But this would corroborate that she actually was awake that morning.
It's so interesting how deep you go into all these things. Cause like, as somebody who doesn't listen, like doesn't, I obviously listen to it a lot, but that's not super into true crime. I still don't go down these rabbit holes unless it's a case that's just like Murdoch's. It's publicized a ton, you know?
Yeah. Or that has just garnered so much publicity like this one.
Yeah.
So Scott also said that part of Lacey's plans was to mop the floor that day to prepare for guests the next day. Now, Margarita did clean the house and mopped the floors, but Lacey was she was known to be a meticulous housekeeper, and they did have pets. They had a dog and one or more cats. Lacey allegedly said that she wanted to mop just the entryway where the dogs and cats came in and out. So Scott filled the bucket for her so that she wouldn't have to do it and carry it around. So that mop bucket was found, but Scott had poured the water out before investigators arrived that evening because he was afraid that the pets would drink out of it. And initially, their reaction or their initial thought to seeing that he had these cleaning supplies out was like, oh, what are you cleaning up? You cleaning up a mess of a crime that you made? Mm-hmm. And why would you need to be mopping if she had just mopped the day before? But you have to consider that, first of all, like I said, they had pets. She's a meticulous housekeeper. And their house was very, very small. So if she's just mopping the entryway, that's like 10, if that, square feet of space. It's not that big of a deal. And we'll touch on that a little bit later, too, because there was a lot of arguments and people being like, gosh, she was that pregnant. Why would she be mopping? Just like all these arguments. And I think it's silly. I'm like, it's not that out of the realm of possibility that she'd want to mop her entryway.
Mm-hmm. Random question. How well off were these people as far as money? What did they do for a living? Were they like...
So Scott was in ag sales and Lacey was a part-time substitute teacher. And so their financials come up later. We'll talk about that, because that was one of the potential motives that people tried to say about this life insurance policy, and that they, you know, he was hoping to get this big inheritance that Lacey was set to inherit. We'll touch on that, but they weren't living well beyond their means, and they—
Is the neighborhood like suburban? Like, what's the neighborhood like?
The neighborhood is— I'm trying to think of how to explain this, like, or how to relate it to something you'd understand, but it's all these like single level ranch homes. They kind of look like bungalow style. They're pretty small. They're close together.
Got it.
And you got to think, this is like kind of Southern California. So yeah, these houses are pretty small.
Okay. It's like I'm watching,
but they're nice.
I'm trying to like watch a movie of what you're explaining inside my head. And I'm trying to picture these people, because like their house is small, yet they have a housekeeper, yet then they have a boat, and I'm like, and I'm just trying to figure out what they're—
And you'll understand details about the boat, because this is not like an extravagant yacht type of boat. This is an aluminum fishing boat. It's 14 feet long with like a bench in it. It's not anything extraordinary.
Okay.
So Scott told investigators during his interrogation that he changed his mind about golfing and decided to take out his new fishing boat instead. He told police that he was near a little island that had a bunch of trash on it and a sign that said no landing. The area was shallow, so he decided it would be a good place to fish, but realized that he forgot some new lures that he had purchased from Big Five in his truck. So he instead used some freshwater jigs from his tackle box. Scott did not know the name of the island, but upon investigation, Brooks Island fit the description. The bag of lures that he said he forgot in his truck was also found the evening Lacey disappeared in his truck, like he said. The fishing pole he used was also found with a freshwater jig on it. And Scott also told them that he spoke to some people at the marina that day about fishing and how they were laughing about how Scott was having a hard time backing his trailer into the water to get his boat. And the people he spoke to were found and corroborated his story also. And I think that this is important, because if Scott was really dumb enough to dump his wife's body in the bay, why would he instantly tell police that's where he was? Right. He immediately offers that up to be like, yeah, I was fishing here all day. I mean, wouldn't you try to lie at least a little bit? Like, I just think it's kind of interesting that he literally is like, no, this is exactly where I was. I talked to people. Here's my ticket to prove that I was there. I mean, it seems
like
irresponsible if you're trying to cover something up.
Yeah, like he's just being truthful because he doesn't have anything to do with it.
So there are common arguments to combat all these facts, like, oh, well, Scott could have gotten on the computer to act as Lacey in an effort to create a ruse. Or that, you know, he set up the curling iron and the stool to make it look like she was alive that morning, or that he would set up all these things. Wouldn't that be the most subtle ruse that he could create, though? Wouldn't it be more compelling to use her phone and text people acting as her? But to make two searches on a computer, one for a scarf and one for an umbrella stand, which they actually weren't searches. They were like links from a Yahoo homepage, I believe. But to think like, yeah, this is totally what Lacey would do. This is going to make them believe that she was alive. I don't know. I just think that there were more ways that he could have fabricated that part of his alibi if he was intentionally lying about that.
Yeah.
And the same thing can be said for the curling iron scenario. He'd have to be paying attention to the fact that Amy showed Lacey the night before how to curl her hair and then set up a scene where Lacey was trying the technique that she learned. So are we really going to suggest that he is such a genius that he's thinking that far ahead to make it look like she was alive when she wasn't?
Right. He's giving every details that you wouldn't think would matter if he didn't do it. Okay, I'm just going to tell you exactly how the day went from the start.
Yeah. Another argument. So I put on our Instagram story that if people had questions about this case or things that they wanted us to touch on or get our opinions on, they could go to mamamystery.com, and there's a message box on the page where you can send us messages anonymously if you want to. And so we did get some responses, and we're going to touch on all of those. One of the questions was, why would Lacey mop the floor if they had just paid their housekeeper to do it the day before? Again, I kind of touched on this, but I don't think that this is that odd. I think if Lacey is known to be this meticulous housekeeper and they have pets that may leave footprints in the front entryway, it's not beyond the realm of understanding that she would want that to be clean.
I think that's something that people look into because of this story, but like, because of there's a problem going on, but like you vacuum all the time. Mm-hmm. Like Kelly loves vacuum lines and the kids might run all over them. And like, if she were to randomly get out the vacuum and do it again 3 hours later, I wouldn't be like, that's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we look at this as weird because someone was killed.
Of all the circumstances. Yes. Yeah. And the entire house, in fact, is only 1,800 square feet. I ended up looking that up because I just wanted to understand. 1,800 square feet, that's not that big. I mean, it wouldn't be out of the realm to mop the entire house if that were the case. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about this boat, because many people believe that Scott bought the boat because he premeditated this murder and always planned to dump her body with the boat. And so, and all of that so that he could start this new life with Amber Fry. When investigators mentioned the boat to Lacey's mom, Sharon said, "What boat?" Adding to this compelling argument that he had these nefarious plans for this boat and that he was keeping it a secret.
And then it's this piece of shit boat.
Well, not only is it a piece of shit boat, but this was actually the fourth boat that Scott owned. One of Scott's friends, Jody Maligi, told investigators on January 4th of 2003, so this is about a little over a week after she went missing, that Scott had mentioned wanting to buy a boat weeks prior to Thanksgiving. Okay, Scott didn't meet Amber Fry until November 20th of 2002, only 8 days prior to Thanksgiving. So he meets Amber Fry and is instantly like, this is the one I'm going to kill my wife for. I'm going to buy a boat and plan this whole thing.
Right.
That just doesn't really make sense in my mind. Another friend of Scott's, Brian Ulrich, told detectives on January 4th that Scott had been discussing buying a boat for over 3 months. And these friends didn't even know about Amber Fry yet. So what reason would they have to make this up in Scott's defense? Mm-hmm. Why would his friends lie about this before they even knew about Amber and before Lacey's body was ever found? So there is a theory that Scott researched the tides and currents in the bay prior to going out to the marina. This was in one of the messages that we got.
This seems so reaching, just in my opinion. Maybe in the true crime world, it's like, let's talk about this, but it seems so reaching to me.
You know, I feel like I have a really hard time trusting anything at face value, whether it's on the media, whether you hear it even on a podcast. Okay, you can even hear it on my podcast, and I would suggest that you go confirm everything that I'm saying. You can, you know, bring me whatever facts or evidence that you have, any of the court transcripts. There's so much out there that you could dig through. But
and you'd be open-minded to it.
Oh, I totally would. And yeah. I am. I still am open-minded about this case because I still don't fully know how I feel about it. But the thing about the tides, it's easy to say, oh, Scott was researching the tides and currents in the bay prior to going to the marina. So he obviously was planning this out and wanted to know the best place to put her body. That's what it's like. They're trying to compel you to think that. Mm-hmm. But in all of Scott's computer usage shown during the trial, only about 30 seconds account for any material that contained charts for the San Francisco Bay. 30 seconds. Is that long enough to really study and understand the tides and
That's
currents
interesting
of what's
to
going
me. Okay,
on?
Okay, so see, I thought this was like a weird thing. That's interesting. Because here's 30 seconds, if you know what you're talking about, if this dude's boating for years and been boating for years and he knows the bay and he knows what he's looking at, that's some time. I mean, if you really know what you're looking at, think of if you said, what's the weather going to be tomorrow? Well, shit, you get on the Weather Channel app and take 6 seconds and you know the weather.
But here's the thing. It's not even a page dedicated to only that. It was like this page about all of the fishing marina and like reservation.
Okay,
stuff.
So it could have been way down on the page.
Right. It could have been on the page, but we don't know that his eyes were actually locked in on just that.
Regardless, I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I don't think the dude's guilty. Real quick, are you sure when we covered this, mm-hmm. you said I thought he was guilty?
Yes.
Okay, we don't often go back and listen to him together, but we're going to need to that one.
Okay, we can. Because we almost fought at the end.
That's ridiculous.
I very, very distinctly remember this because I've always had issues with this case. And I was trying
over this case.
I did have issues with you after that case. You had issues with me.
Yeah.
But that there are just so many things. And the when you look at just the facts that were displayed on the media, just the like a few simple things, sure, it makes him look guilty as sin. But when you think about all these other things, it's like, oh, but that doesn't really make sense. And it just makes you question. So right. We're going to keep going because I don't want this to take forever.
This dude's been locked up since, right?
Yes.
Crazy. Okay, go ahead.
So Scott's boat was a 14-foot Game Fisher aluminum boat. And the defense argued that this boat was not stable enough to dump a body from. And they even attempted a reenactment and videotaped it. And when you watch this video, it does make you wonder how anyone would be able to dump a body or anything heavy for that matter from this tiny boat without it capsizing or tipping over or taking on water. So in this video, and you have to think the bay, it's windy, there are waves. And if you're really actively in the middle of the day trying to dump a body from this boat, I mean, it showed this guy trying to unload a dummy that was the same size and weight as what Lacey was.
I almost want to watch this reenactment video just to see if it's like cheesy or if it's like
no. Okay, I'll show it to you real quick. Okay, so explain the video I just showed you.
Yeah, so it's not like clown looking. I was like, what the hell is this going to look like? There's a guy out in the bay, and he's just in like basically, like I said, a metal canoe. Just to give you an idea of it, it's a piece of crap.
It's the same boat.
It's a piece of crap. It's just it doesn't look like it should be in the bay. Mm-hmm. And anyways, when he tries to throw this dummy over, you can see the back end of the boat like kind of taking on water, and then it ends up flipping over.
Yeah. So you have to consider that that's also being done in broad daylight. Anybody could see what he's doing. And he's also making contact with people at the marina, talking to people. All of this would have to be done in broad daylight. Not only that, but the transfer of her body to the boat would have to be done in broad daylight because he had to back up his truck to attach it to the trailer.
And it would have been spotless, right? Because his car showed no trace of her.
Right. Same with the boat. I think there was just one strand of hair, but like,
so you did a spotless transfer of the body. There was no blood splatter, no nothing.
There was no physical evidence of any bodily fluids from Lacey anywhere. Not in the house, not in the truck, not in the boat, nowhere. Mm-hmm. So also about this boat, Scott used his real name and real address to buy the boat. He registered the boat with the DMV. Is that the act of someone trying to hide this boat? And there's also this argument that nobody knew about this purchase, including Lacey. Now, it's impossible to actually know that without actually asking Lacey. But he purchased the boat on December 9th. He withdrew $1,400 from their joint checking account to purchase the boat. Don't you think she would notice that? And Lacey was with Scott at the warehouse where the boat was parked on December 20th, which would also explain why one of her strands of hair was found there. But there was a woman at the warehouse who remembered seeing Lacey in the warehouse and Lacey needing to use the bathroom. And so the boat is out in plain view. She would have seen it. Now, that's not to say he could lie and be like, oh, that's not my boat. But I mean, why go to all that trouble when you've registered it with the DMV? You're surely going to get something in the mail about it. You've withdrawn $1,400 from your joint checking with what other explanation? Mm-hmm. So it was actually Al Brocchini who purposefully left this information out of his police report when a witness from the warehouse said they saw Lacey there on the 20th. Now, why would an investigating officer leave that out of their report? This is just one of many things that Al Brocchini left out or carefully omitted from his investigation because he had his eyes so set on Scott Peterson. So now we're going to talk about the anchors because there's been a lot said about these anchors. So it's often been said that Scott made at least 5 anchors, but only one anchor was found, suggesting that the other anchors were used to weigh down Lacey's body in the water. So the man who sold Scott the boat, wanted to keep his own anchors. And these were like homemade anchors made out of concrete and rebar. And you just put them in like a tin can or a pitcher. And those are your anchors, okay? So the man who sold him the boat wanted to keep his own. So Scott researched the cost of anchors. He found that it would be $30 to buy a new anchor or $3 to make his own with a bag of concrete. He told the police that he used a 2.5-quart painter's bucket to make the anchor and that he placed a rebar loop in the concrete for a handle to tie the rope to. And then the remaining concrete that was left over, he said he used on his driveway to repair some cracks or holes or something. Loose concrete was found next to his driveway, confirming what he told police. Detective Albrocchini said there were multiple rings of concrete dust found at the warehouse, indicating that he made more than one. But the pictures show only one real circle, and it just happens to be the exact size of a 2.5-quart painter's bucket. So again, we're kind of like making something out of nothing. Like you're trying to make your narrative fit the evidence, or the evidence fit your narrative. And it's just shoddy police work. It's lazy. Mm-hmm. So their finances, we're going to talk about the finances. I've heard a lot of people argue that their finances were in dire straits, or you see it on magazine covers, and that there was a life insurance policy that he had recently taken out on Lacey. In fact, the police told Lacey's family on January 15th, about 3 weeks after she went missing, that Scott was having an affair and that he had recently taken out a life insurance policy on Lacey. The police told her family that the same day. But the truth was that the policies were actually taken out on both Scott and Lacey back in June of 2001, a year and a half prior to her going missing. And their financial planner testified in court that Lacey's was worth $100,000 while Scott's was worth $250,000, but that it was Lacey who thought they should be the same amount, so they upped hers to $250,000. It was Lacey's choice, though. Mm-hmm. But again, when you're only feeding them information that fits your narrative, like, hey, they upped the life insurance on Lacey, but they leave out the fact that it was done 18 months prior, mm-hmm. and then they add in the fact that he was having an affair, it of course is going to make you think the absolute worst.
Did his affair come out before, like, all of this investigation began, or early in the investigation?
Yes. So we'll get into Amber Fry and how she came forward and everything. It's actually coming up next. So besides all of that, there is really no evidence to support that Scott would have gained anything financially by killing Lacey. Again, there was actually an inheritance that she was supposed to receive once her grandparents passed away, and it was worth like over $1 million, I think maybe even over $2 million that was going to be split among her and her siblings. Mm-hmm. But they weren't dead yet, and with Lacey being gone, Scott would receive nothing. So that didn't make any sense. People were trying to make that make sense, but that wasn't an option.
Yeah.
So this is why the prosecution heavily relied on the motive actually revolving around one woman, which was Amber Fry. They believed, and so do many others, that Scott killed Lacey because he did not want to have this baby and wanted to start a new life with Amber Fry. So let's talk about it. Scott Peterson met Amber Fry on November 20th, 2002, at the Elephant Bar in Fresno, California. They were actually set up by a mutual friend, and after a few drinks, they went to a Japanese restaurant for dinner before they spent the night together at a hotel in Fresno. During that dinner, Scott lied to Amber multiple times about upcoming travel plans, like how he had a fishing trip to Alaska over Thanksgiving, and a trip to Maine with his parents for Christmas, and a trip to Paris for New Year's Eve, since he would have to be in Europe for business all through January. So he's essentially making himself unavailable for the near future. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I've told this story before on this podcast. I might have. But when I was pregnant with my daughter, it was one of the worst years of my life. I was going through a divorce. I lost my mom somewhat unexpectedly. And I had really reached this mental breaking point. And I asked my obstetrician, he was my only doctor at the time that I even thought I could turn to. I asked for some help if he thought that there was a medication that was safe that I could take while I was pregnant. I mean, I only had a couple weeks left until my due date, but I was really struggling. And I'll never forget the loneliness and the shame that I felt when his response was, "You should probably just try to take a nap." And I thought, I thought, you freaking take a nap. First of all, I mean, with more colorful language. But it was also in that moment that I realized, I think I might need to find a new obstetrician, one that actually listens to me, cares about my well-being as a mother, but also for my baby. I just needed someone to cover all the bases. So enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not talking about just a few doctors. No, we're talking about tens of thousands of doctors to choose from, all with verified patient reviews so that you can make sure the vibes are vibing before you ever even meet in real life. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you, and you can instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doctor you want, you can book them immediately, so there's no more waiting awkwardly on hold with a receptionist or wondering how far out they book or any of that mess. All of these doctors have verified reviews from actual patients. And you can also filter out specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition that you're searching for. I used ZocDoc to find a new obstetrician, and I'm so glad that I did. And I found a place that I'm comfortable with. We're having our fourth baby. All of my babies have come out perfectly healthy, and I have been healthy. And it's just been a smooth process ever since I switched. I'm so grateful. So go to ZocDoc.com/mystery and download the app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today for whatever it is that you need some help with. That's ZocDoc.com/mystery, ZocDoc.com/mystery. Over the next 4 or 5 days, there were 5 phone calls between Scott and Amber. And according to their phone records, these calls lasted a grand total of 18 minutes. From the 25th to December 1st, Amber and Scott did not talk and they did not see each other because Scott was in Southern California with Lacey. But when they got back, Scott did spend the night with Amber on December 2nd and 3rd. On December 6th, Scott received a call from one of Amber's friends confronting him about being married. This friend is named Sean Sibley, and Scott told Sean at first that he was not married, but then he called back about an hour later and he was like, actually, I was married, but I lost my wife. Sean told Scott that he had to tell Amber or Sean would. And so on December 9th, Scott told Amber the infamous lie that he had lost his wife. And this is prior to Lacey going missing.
Man, this dude wouldn't be scrutinized like this without all of this shit. Mm-hmm. I think that they would have looked at it completely different.
So here, okay, in an effort to be devil's advocate, okay, don't come for me and chastise me for having this opinion, because I know there's a lot of people who this is a sticking point for them. This is the lie that sealed the coffin for Scott, okay? That he said he lost his wife and then a few weeks later loses his wife. Mm-hmm. It makes too much sense, right? I get it. I'm not stupid. I'm not blind. I get it. But it does remind me of that scene in Christmas Vacation where Clark tells that pretty sales girl that while he's shopping for his wife, he says, God rest her soul. And it's not funny, but it does make me wonder how often scumbags lie about being married or widowed in an attempt to garner sympathy or attention from a woman. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it make sense? I mean, he at first lies about being married, but then he gets caught about being married. And this narcissistic scumbag is like, well, okay, I'll be honest, but like, how can I be honest while still lying so that I can keep this thing going? Because I just have this weird fetish for cheating. Mm-hmm. It's not that. I see why a man, because so many men are shit, not you, but a lot of them are.
but there's just a lot of shitty people. It's
for sure. But like, it's not that out of the realm for men to lie about their relationships men will even say like, yeah, my wife is terrible. She beats me and lies to me and all these
things to garner sympathy
because it makes these women want to fall for them even harder.
I completely understand what you're saying. I read today that the average 23-year-old female in America right now has slept with the same number of the average 54-year-old man.
Oh my God.
Okay. So listen, I'm just saying that because I think it's interesting and because the counter to the shitty man thing. But regardless, this dude screwed himself.
Yeah. To be fair, though, we're talking about one shitty guy.
Yeah. And when his character went to trash because of all this coming out, and then your lie was that, it looks terrible. But I mean, we can't look at that in a vacuum.
Right. It does seem like a really unfortunate coincidence if this really was just a lie to get this girl to sleep with you. Mm-hmm. And then you conveniently make yourself unavailable for the next like 2 months because he obviously just wants to hit it and quit it. And he's like, yeah, I lost my wife. Do you feel so bad for me? Make me feel better. Like I could just see that coming from a douchebag guy. And I think that's what he is. I do think that. But I just don't think it equates to... Yeah, so he murdered her after knowing this girl for 5 minutes.
Right.
So anyway, Scott tells Amber that he was married but lost his wife. Then on the 11th, he went to a birthday party with Amber. Oh, by the way, I don't think I actually talk about this super in detail, but Amber had a daughter, a toddler daughter. This girl wasn't even 2 yet. And so this whole argument about how Scott didn't want a child, but he's willing to...
Have you not told us the whole entire time that there was a daughter involved?
With Amber. Amber has a daughter.
Do they have any other kids?
They don't have a daughter together. Amber had a daughter of her own from a previous relationship.
I understand.
When Scott met Amber, she was forthcoming that she had this daughter who was not quite 2 years old. So this argument that Scott would murder his pregnant wife because he didn't want to be a dad and wanted to start this relationship with Amber, that does not make sense because he would essentially be a stepfather, which is arguably even harder sometimes than being just a natural father.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. It just, that doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't compute in my brain.
No, I agree with you.
And I think you can speak to that because you're both, you're a stepdad and you're a father. So, I mean.
I think what you said is accurate.
Okay. Thank you. Because I don't want to be insensitive, but it's like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, on the 14th, December 14th, Scott went to a Christmas party with Amber and then spent the night at her house. And there is this infamous picture of Scott and Amber together at this party. And Scott is wearing a Santa hat with this big grin. And then that same night, there's an infamous picture of Lacey in the red satin two-piece outfit. And it's taken of her sitting all by herself in this chair at a Christmas party alone. And she's beautiful. She has this big, beautiful smile. She's got her big, beautiful belly. But it is really sad when you hold those pictures side by side and you see that Scott is actively cheating on his pregnant wife with this girl. And the wife is sitting alone at this party with her pregnant belly. Like, it's sickening. Very gross. But that would be the last night that Scott saw Amber in person, the 14th. From the 16th to the 23rd, Scott and Amber did exchange 26 phone calls, with more than half of those actually being placed. It was two-thirds of those were placed by Amber to Scott. But most of those calls actually went to voicemail. They were playing a lot of phone tag. After Lacey disappeared, they communicated less. The first week Lacey went missing, Amber called Scott 29 times, with Scott returning 11 of those phone calls. And at this point, Amber didn't put it together that Lacey is his wife or that he's married. She didn't know.
Oh, no shit.
Not at this point. It wasn't until December 30th, 6 days later, that a friend came to Amber with information proving that Scott was the husband of the missing woman in Modesto. And at this point, this story is starting to spread like wildfire. And I don't know if maybe Scott just didn't expect it to spread like this, because this is kind of before social media, where everything is so instant, right in your face. But
can you imagine if this happened in 2020 and not 2003?
So many things would be different.
Oh man!
Now than they were 20 years ago, for sure. But so Amber is confronted with this information, and so she immediately calls the police to tell them about their relationship. And they meet her the same day at Radio Shack and buy equipment to attach to her phone so that she can start recording their phone calls. And she has to pretend that she has no idea that Scott is married and that his wife is missing. And this is all in an effort by police to hopefully trap Scott into some sort of confession.
Shout out to Radio Shack.
I mean, this is one of the smart things that the police did do. This is one thing that they can get some props for in regards to this case, is that they coached Amber to basically be this pawn for them. And I mean, without these recorded phone calls, the jury's opinion of Scott might be different.
Informants were still common men, right?
What?
Like, that's what she would essentially be as an informant.
I guess, yeah, sure. Okay. So December 31st, 2002, Scott really sealed his fate. If it weren't bad enough that he was cheating on his pregnant wife who then went missing, there is a recorded phone call with Amber. And at this point, she's still pretending not to know about his marriage or Scott's missing wife. And he is still maintaining the lies that he originally told her, that he was in Paris for New Year's Eve. And in reality, the candlelight vigil for Lacey was about to start in 10 minutes. And he called her, called Amber, pretending like he was in Paris.
No. And so, this stuff is weird.
I do have the audio, so I'm going to play that for you now.
Hello? Amber.
Hi.
Amber.
I can hear you.
Amber.
I can hear you.
Amber, can you hear me? It's New Year's.
I know. I can hear you.
Amber, New Year's here. Are you there?
Yes. Have a good time.
Amber. Hey, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's.
I wanted to call you.
Thank you.
Amber, you there?
I'm here.
Amber.
I wish you could hear me.
I'm on the, I think that you're there. I'm near the Eiffel Tower. New Year's celebration is unreal. The crowd is huge.
The crowd's huge?
Amber.
Yeah, I'm here.
Amber, you're there. I can't hear you right now, but I'll call you on your New Year's.
Okay, I'll hear from you then.
Amber. Amber, I'll miss you. I'll see you soon.
Okay. I hope
so that's pretty bad.
That's not a good look.
That's a really, really bad look. To think that you're about to attend the candlelight vigil for your missing pregnant wife. Her family is there. They're all distraught, crying, shaking because they are sick over her disappearance. And you are calling your girlfriend, pretending you're in Paris. The Eiffel Tower, it's amazing. Just, it's bad.
It is.
That's bad. Yeah. Very, very bad. Not good. So the next day is New Year's Day. They talk again because he calls her back for what is supposed to be California's New Year's. Like, he's got his lies really planned out. I mean, it's like pathological at this point.
His lies when it comes to the cheating thing.
Yes.
But all the other stuff, I think it's clear he was telling the truth. These lies suck.
Yeah, he's talking about the cobblestone sidewalks and how he's going on runs on the cobblestone and tripping because this cobblestone is so rough. And then he's talking about all the weight he's gained from all this rich French food and his friend Pascal that he's touring with. Like,
it's out there.
It's absurd. It's bad. So, yeah, he calls her the next day. They talk again and they have this long conversation. This time it lasts about an hour and a half. I'm not going to play that for you, obviously. It's available to listen to, though, on YouTube if you want to. During this call, though, some little key points that I just found interesting is that Amber is very talkative and chipper on these phone calls, and Scott does not sound interested. He actually sounds pretty withdrawn and disinterested. There's a point where she says, somebody asked me about my birthday and what I was doing. And Scott says, yeah. Amber says, and I didn't know if you'll be back by then, right? And he said, mm-hmm. And she says, so what do you think you want to do? What do you want to do on my birthday? And he says, well, something good.
Sounds like he just wants to hit it and quit it.
Yeah. She says, something what? And he says, good. She says, something good. So are we going to do the Napa Valley when you come back? And he said, yeah. And she says, that'll be fun. I've never done anything like that. I mean, all of his responses are these like one word answers. So it's interesting that in all of this footage, you hear him being like, oh, Eiffel Tower, it's amazing. And I mean, he's obviously lying.
Mm-hmm.
But then in all these other conversations, he's just kind of like, God, get me off this fucking phone call. I don't want to be on this call. That's like truly the vibe that I get.
Yeah.
And so knowing that he was making himself unavailable for all the upcoming holidays, it does just make me think that he never really wanted a future with Amber, that he really did just want like a one-night stand. It's just hard to deny that when you look at everything as a whole, not just the little pieces where he's excited to talk to her. Mm-hmm. Now, his reason for keeping Amber close at bay was because he said he was afraid that if people found out about the affair, it would make him look bad, and then they would stop looking for Lacey because they would immediately assume it was him. And his argument was that he really wanted to keep the search for Lacey alive. Now, if Scott is innocent, this is really an unwinnable situation because you fucked up by starting this affair while your wife is pregnant, period. Period. You should not have done that ever, ever, ever in the first place. But then when your wife goes missing, now you've either got to tell this woman the truth and people find out that you're a scumbag and assume you must have killed your wife, or you pray Amber doesn't find out and that Lacey shows up in the meantime. But like, at some point, Amber would have to find out about Lacey's disappearance. So there's just not a lot of forethought here. And if one would argue that Scott had the forethought to stage Lacey being alive at the house the morning of the 24th after he left the warehouse and Marina, wouldn't he need that same forethought to predict how this affair was going to blow up in his face? Maybe he didn't assume that it was going to garner as much media attention and national media attention as it did. But again, you either can say he's this genius with a lot of forethought and a pathological liar, or he's this other guy who's caught in a really unfortunate situation because he's a liar.
Playing deep water and you might drown. This dude is in deep water.
Yeah, he has sank.
Yes.
So they talk every day from January 1st to the 6th, and then things change on the 6th when Scott finally confesses to Amber that he has been lying to her this entire time. The majority of their contact was actually initiated by Amber, but if Scott was that desperate to have this life with Amber, he never really acted like it. He'd say the right thing, but it was very robotic and insincere. And listen, like I said, I'd play all the recordings, but it's just forever. However, there is one phone call that I found to be very damning and gross. And this is after he already admitted that he lied to her about everything. They have this back and forth after he admits it where she's like, "We never need to talk again." And he's like, "I get it." And then she calls him the next day. And it's just like, okay, I don't know how much of this is you being coached by police or
sounds like a lot of that.
Yeah, it's very confusing. But on February 10th of 2003, this is another one of those things that makes me question his innocence because I'm like, this makes you look guilty as heck. So on February 10th, 2003, Scott surprised Amber with a gift for her birthday. Her birthday was February 10th. He told her to go to a hospital parking lot in Fresno, and there waiting for her under a tree was a grocery bag, like a Trader Joe's paper grocery bag, filled with presents for her. Amber testified that in the sack, and there is a picture that shows all of this in the court documents. I did have to like scour to find it, but I wanted to confirm because I was like, man, if this is true, this is really messed up. Mm-hmm. And it's freaking true. There's pictures to prove it. So in this sack was a card, a necklace, a Norah Jones CD. And this is when she was famous for that song that's like, "Come Away With Me." You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what that is.
It's like back from 2004. Very, very popular at the time. There's also a can of wildflower seeds and a silver box. And then she also sent he had also sent her this other parcel to her office with some books and a little purse for her two-year-old daughter. Okay?
A lot of thought went into this.
Oh, hold on. It's February 10th. That was Lacey's due date.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The due date happened to be Amber's birthday.
This stuff makes his character just go to complete shit.
There is absolutely no explaining that away. You've already admitted that you lied about everything. Everybody knows your wife is missing. Now everybody knows you've been having this affair. And you still have the audacity to go out and buy gifts for your freaking girlfriend and go hide them and stage this romantic little scavenger hunt
on what happens to be
the day your son was supposed to be born.
Oh man, that's pretty pathetic. That's beyond pathetic.
Beyond. Like I can't even come up with a decent word. It's so bad. So on April 13th of 2003, a couple was walking their dog along the shoreline and came across the remains of a deceased infant. The next day, partial remains of a woman were also found nearby, and it was confirmed to be Lacey and Connor. So Lacey's body was found wearing beige pants and a maternity bra, but her body was severely disfigured from being in the water so long. It was basically just a torso that they found. And investigators surmised that her limbs were missing because they had been tied down to anchors in the bay, hence the speculation about the missing anchors. 5 days after Connor was discovered, police arrested Scott on April 18th, which was Good Friday. So when Scott was arrested, this was another, like, attack on Scott in the media, where things were portrayed a certain way to really mold the public's perception of him. So a lot of people were saying, oh, he was arrested as he was trying to flee to Mexico. The day Scott was arrested, he was arrested in San Diego, where his family lives, okay? San Diego happens to be 17 miles from the Mexico border. So because he was arrested in San Diego, rather than say he visiting was arrested while visiting his family, he was arrested near the Mexico border. See how that molds the way you think? Yes. You just cannot trust media then or now.
Can't headline read.
Yeah. So he visited his family frequently, but the funny thing to me is that Scott literally went to Mexico for work and was there from February 3rd to February 7th. I think he was in Guadalajara for a short amount of time. The police even knew he was going there. So if he wanted to flee, why not do it then? He's literally in Mexico. He's in there for work. If he was really going to flee, wouldn't he have already done it? So he knew the police were watching him like a hawk. He knew everyone had this horrible opinion of him and that everyone hated him. It doesn't make any sense. I don't believe that he was trying to flee.
Yeah, that's next one.
Yeah. Regarding his appearance, he had grown a goatee and his hair was this light orange color. Like he tried to bleach it. It almost looks like he tried to spray some sun in on it and just lighten it. So it's like his hair went from being like your color to like orange, basically. But he had had the goatee for a while, and detectives were all aware of this goatee. This was not some immediate overnight change in his appearance. Scott said he changed his appearance more so to evade media because they were constantly following him and hounding him down. They were parking outside the front of his house. They had, like, blowhorns and megaphones constantly just harassing him. Not that he didn't deserve it, but that is why he kind of changed his appearance, because he was hoping it would kind of throw some people off his track. Now, he was also found with camping gear that he had purchased on March 16th at REI. Now, this one is weird to me because he only had this car that he was arrested in. It was like a red Mercedes coupe. He only had that car for 6 days. So this means that he had to transfer the camping gear into his car.
Why did he only have the car for 6 days?
Because he had just bought it. So the police took his truck. They confiscated his truck early on in the investigation, and he needed some vehicle to drive. So he had been renting different vehicles until he finally found this one to buy. And we'll talk about the details of the purchase, because there's a lot of details surrounding that as well.
How long
but also,
is this?
If you're trying... we're nearing the end.
Okay. I just feel like it's been a long one, but it's so good.
Well, you're also with Ed, so I feel like time is a distortion right now.
Onward.
So... another thing about this car is that it's this red Mercedes. If he's really trying to hide, why pick this like red, very noticeable, easy to spot car?
Right.
But again, the camping gear being found in his car when he purchased it March 16th. I mean, I guess maybe it's not that weird. If he purchased it and then had it in his car because he couldn't go home and he was staying at people's houses or whatever, and he, you know, bought this car, he had to put his belongings into it. So maybe it's not that weird. I don't know.
That's not strange.
I guess it's not.
It's like I moved my backpack over.
Yeah. Like oh, he had a backpack. He was trying to flee.
Yeah, he was on the run.
Okay, so he also had $14,000 in cash with him. $8,000 of the cash was from the sale of his Dodge Dakota pickup. The buyer paid him in cash. And then Scott's mom, Jackie, withdrew $10,000 in cash from an old account that she shared with Scott by mistake. And this was all proven in court with receipts and bank statements. But Jackie withdrew this $10,000 in cash. She gave it back to Scott so that he could put it back in the account. And then she went to the correct account from her own personal account and withdrew the $10,000 that she originally wanted. And she did that on April 17th. So that would equal at this point that he has about $18,000 in cash. But 6 days prior to his arrest, he had bought that used car in which he was pulled over, and he bought it with cash for $3,600, leaving him with roughly $14,440 in cash. Now, I can absolutely see why none of that looks good, but I think the reasons, aside from the camping gear, because that's just, I don't know why you'd have camping, I don't know. I think the reasons, though, are pretty reasonable. In my opinion, I don't believe he was trying to flee to Mexico that day, but I do think it's just another nail in the coffin of public opinion.
So right now, we have a guy that's changing his appearance in a new car that he bought, fleeing to Mexico with camping gear and a bunch of cash.
Mm-hmm. I think I've heard also that there was other things with him, like a bunch of Viagra. He had like a ton of Viagra.
Gonna go bang some people.
Hostage. You can't just say things. You can't just say things. Oh, man. So I want to talk about the aftermath. So we obviously know during the trial that the recordings came out. Amber Fry testified against him. She was crucial to the prosecution, and he ended up being convicted of murder and sentenced to the death penalty. But I do want to just talk about some of the things that make me personally question if he got a fair trial. I think you can, no matter what you think about him being guilty or innocent, you can't deny that this guy was denied a fair trial because of everything that happened from the moment Lacey went missing. Less than 24 hours, like I said in the beginning. In fact, it was closer to 12 hours. This was posted at 10:30 in the morning on Christmas Day. She went missing the evening of Christmas Eve. So it's not that long for people, for the media to announce this press release, the police to say, here's exactly where he was. They even said he was in the Bay Area fishing when Lacey disappeared. It's really unfortunate that they did that because if it wasn't Scott who killed Lacey, then whoever did had an opportunity to see that or hear that in the media and know exactly where to put or move Lacey's body to make it look like Scott did it.
Yeah, that was dumb.
That was a huge mess up. Also, Scott had no history of violence. There was no forensic or physical evidence. There's no real motive unless you consider the affair a motive, but I just think it's quite a stretch. This was actually his third affair that we know of, and there were rumored to be at least six affairs. So why would the affair with Amber Fry, someone he knew for, barely knew for maybe a month, be the one to make him commit murder? And you know, a lot of people argue that he doesn't have a history of violence. Well, neither did Chris Watts. And Chris Watts annihilated his whole family.
Yeah, that dude was a bad dude.
So that one doesn't really hold a lot of weight for me because, like, that argument just doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Let's see. What else before I wrap up here? We did get one message that said statistically, or maybe it was a comment, statistically, he is guilty. Just because of all the facts of the case. But the argument is that it's more likely that she would be killed by her own husband than a random burglar. And so just statistically, okay, it's more likely that she's...
basing it on random statistics.
Right. But it's also not statistically likely that someone could commit this crime and leave no evidence in the home, the yard, the truck, the boat, the warehouse, or on himself, or do it in broad daylight with no eyewitnesses. So what are the chances that both of these things could happen at the same time? If you're one to focus on statistics, Scott would actually be less likely than if the burglars.
I agree with that too. If you focus on statistics, you can make it sound whichever way you want. You can just twist the statistics mm-hmm. to support whatever your story is.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of like when you seek to just confirm your own argument. There's a term for this. I can't
justification.
Think what it is. Well, no, it's a different term. It's like a trendy term. I can't think of it because I'm tired, and it's getting late. But police, this is another thing. Police reported that Scott made 3 trips to the marina after Lacey went missing while police were actively searching that area. Now, the media portrayed this as him monitoring the scene of the crime or coming back to the scene of the crime. But Scott actually said he did this The reason for returning to the marina was actually to find the guys that he talked to on the day he was there, because police were saying that they couldn't find them to corroborate his story, even though there was a police report made by Detective Rick Armendariz, who filed a police report after an interview with one of the men who said, yes, Scott was here on Christmas Eve. Here's what he was wearing. Here's the truck he was driving. And yeah, he was having trouble backing his trailer down the ramp. This is exactly what Scott told police in that first interview. That report was filed on December 27th. But on January 2nd, a detective called Scott to say, yeah, we're having trouble locating anyone at the marina to corroborate that you were there and that you said you were there when you said you were there. Hence prompting Scott to go out to himself to see if he could find these guys and be like, hey, I don't know why they're saying they can't find you, but can you please help me out here and say, you know, that you saw me here? And that's backed up. That's not just a theory. That's not just something he pulled out of thin air. That's backed up by this police report and then this phone call that was recorded of the police detective saying, yeah, we can't find anybody. Look at the report from 4 days ago then. So after the trial, the media continued to warp the public view of Scott to portray him as this monster. A couple months after the end of Scott's trial, Amber Fry went on the Oprah show to promote her book. She wrote a book about this whole thing. The show ended with this shocking revelation that when Scott was arrested, there was a dagger found in his car and directions to Amber's office suggesting that Scott could have been on his way to make Amber his next victim. It was already proven during the trial that, yes, a dagger was found, but it belonged to the previous owner of the car. It was hidden between the driver's seat and the door and had not been removed from the car when it was sold to Scott just 6 days prior. In the passenger seat was Amber's work address and the book, The Purpose-Driven Life. This was a book that Amber gave to Scott and said she wanted back. So he had the address, not directions, just the address to mail it back to her. I think it would have been pretty stupid to show up at her place of work in person or meeting her in person at all at this point. However, why not just leave it at a bush like you did her birthday present? I don't know. That's weird. But Scott, at the end of the day, never stood a chance, guilty or not, because he just was not given a fair trial in the public or in the courtroom. And so that is ultimately where I land on this case. Do I think he did it? Like, do I think he's guilty or innocent? Man, I don't freaking know. I go both ways. I really, really do.
The orange van thing, though. It was.
Yeah. So when you consider the witnesses that were never followed up with, and people can say, oh, witnesses aren't reliable all day, but there were at least 12 within the first week. I can understand saying, oh, one eyewitness might not be reliable, but when you come up with 12,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. And so there was a documentary recently done about Truth and Lies about the murder of Lacey Peterson. Al Brocchini, this cop, goes on there and he's like, oh yeah, the witnesses who said that they saw a pregnant woman walking their dog. Well, there was another woman in the neighborhood who was pregnant and had a golden retriever and was walking her dog. So we confirmed that it was her. That's not true. The pregnant woman did not have a golden retriever. She had a dog. It was not the same dog. It wasn't even a close resemblance to the dog. So, and again, you never followed up with the original witnesses. So to try and twist it and, you know, redirect people's thinking to be like, oh no, the witnesses, they saw something else. I'm sorry. No, I'm not buying it, because you never followed up with them when you had the chance. That right there, red flag to me, because if those witnesses saw her walking, Scott is innocent, period. No matter all the shit that he did after, it doesn't matter. It would mean that he did not, could not have killed her, period. The van, another thing, we'll find out soon enough, and I'll surely update when that comes out. But if her DNA is found in the van, Scott is innocent. These two things can be true. He can be innocent of murdering his wife while also being scum of the earth husband, a complete shitbag, dirtbag husband. Those two things can be true.
Yes.
At the end of the day, I'm about to lose my voice.
Yeah, you're passionate. This is good. You've got a lot of passion.
And I'm probably going to lose my mind after this. And I feel like we're eventually going to have to do a follow-up, because this was an hour long. I mean, this case could go on for days. I know other podcasters who have spent 17 hours providing content. Like, they have content worth of 17 hours.
But I got to go cold plunge in sauna.
And I got to go to bed.
Mama. Mystery. Out.
Goodbye.
If the glove fits, you must acquit.
No, it's it doesn't fit. Oh my gosh. To your credit, we've never discussed the OJ case. You know that's what that's from, right? Yeah. Okay. Anyways.
How did that even sound?
Probably not great.
Just delete that part.